So a group of kids from Tribeca Academy went off campus today for lunch and had a rainbow party.
A rainbow party? They're still having those?
I thought they were a suburban myth.
Yeah, well, apparently not. Explicit photos were taken and then they went viral at the school, so we've got a lot of kids, panicking parents.
Did I miss an episode of Girls? Remind me what a rainbow party is.
Remind you, it's when girls wear different shades of lipstick and they take turns on the guys.
Yeah, the first guy to get every color of the rainbow, he wins.
Brief each other in the car, guys. Let's go. I'm never having kids.
In New York City, sexually based offenses are considered especially heinous. These are their stories.
Hey guys, welcome to Munch My Benson. My name is Adam. I am here on the Upper East Side of Manhattan. I am joined on the line by Josh. How's it going up in the frozen north, Josh?
It's pretty balmy.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's been humid. It's July in states of standing water.
Yeah.
States full of it. So, yeah, I'm house sitting for my brother.
Nice. Where's he? La Crescent, La Crosse, one of those?
He's in La Crosse.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's nice. Central La Crosse. I won't out him, say where he is, but yeah. I just finished a La Crosse beer. A Pearl Street Brewery, Goes Copia, which is a Goes, obviously, brewed with mango, guava, and cranberry. And now I've moved on to a...
Sounds very fruity.
Brewing Project beer, nice. Triple IPA. So Brewing Project is from Eau Claire, where Drew used to live.
I've been sampling some of the local beers. There's this incredible craft beer store that's around the corner. We went there and had drinks outside the other night. But when I went in there, it was right after I'd been like unpacking, actually moving shit up the stairs. So I was so tired and all I wanted was beer. And I walked in there and there's like 1,000 different cans of, you know, everything is complicated. Yeah. Uh-huh. I cannot handle this shit. I'm leaving.
No. Fuck this. Get me a place with fucking 5 taps.
Absolutely. But I'm actually right now drinking a sparkling water from your brother's neck of the woods. I've got a LaCroix in my hand. So
yeah, buddy.
I'm enjoying the... what is it? The clean mountain waters or whatever.
Yeah, I don't know what they...
Right now, I'm on the kind of like mainstream local craft beers. That's what I'm working with. So there's Six Point and there's Montauk are kind of the two kind of bigger ones. And they're both great. I've had a few beers from each of them. I would recommend...
I'm assuming you're sort of not having to do Brooklyn that much.
Oh, no. I've been to Brooklyn once. Saw our mutual friends over
no,
there.
No, Brooklyn Brewing.
Oh, Brooklyn Brewing now. Yeah, no, yeah. I haven't had Brooklyn Brewing. It's
fine.
I mean,
you have in the past.
I've had in the past. It's fine. It's just not, it never stuck with me as something that great that I needed to dip my toes back in that pool, but, you know.
Sorry, did you say 5 points too or no?
6 Point is what it's called.
That's dumb, because 5 points was, you know. Whatever. Well, I'm sure 6 Point is some dumb fucking
it's something.
Thing, but at a certain point, like how many points can
how
you
many
have?
Points
can
you need?
Have 2 points? Can you have 3 points? I mean, how many points does New York have to have? Do they have to have ownership over all of the points?
I've been to the Dr. Pepper Museum in Waco, and they had a buck there with 64 points. So, I know, you can have a lot of points.
So they have that ownership?
I guess. Yeah, I guess. They also had a Siamese lamb, and they had some other, you know, freak show shit.
Yeah, the Dr. Pepper Museum's amazing.
Yeah, you know, I'd go back there if I were a 7-year-old, or actually 7th grader. That's when I was there.
Oh, I've gone as an adult. The animatronic Dr. Pepper, that guy's fucking terrifying.
Well, on that note, speaking of terrifying, yeah. We have an episode of SVU to get to that I did not take very many notes of. In fact, I only watched it once, so I will have commentary.
I've got notes to cover us.
No, I'm sure you do, yeah.
Yeah.
I have some tabs, but not really that many notes. Yeah, you got the recap for this one this week?
It'd be funny if I didn't.
Yeah, it would be funny.
It'd be like how it used to be with those first like five episodes where we weren't writing them and really should have been.
Yeah, just ramble.
Yeah, those were a fucking motherfucker to edit. So we are watching an episode from season 16. It is episode 19, so two episodes later than the one we just covered last week. This one is called Granting Immunity. Parents with kids are interacting, planting one on one another with reckless abandon in a way that's sincerely terrifying in this post-COVID world. Kids are passing playing cards from lip to lip. Teens are stripping down to their underwear in some parentless truancy fest, slathering on lipstick for clearly untoward purposes. One of the toolbag truants jacks it in class to pics that they were sending to each other, and then said jacker forwards the pics on, where they're eventually seen by the Tribeca Academy principal. The unit is called in to investigate the Rainbow Party Lunch Hour Teen Beach Fest, which they detail quite a bit before Liv cedes to the clear S&P issues abounding from a continued conversation and tells them to finish their convo in the car on the way to the school. Continuation of the convo clearly left on the cutting room floor and lost to the world forever, we jump to the school where rich fuck parents are outraged that their 9th and 10th grade blowjob enthusiasts might face larger consequences. Throughout the questioning, these germed-up teens are all starting to cough and run fevers, and one of the guardians, Gabriel's stepmom, was at the pediatrician earlier when Liv was there with Noah. The said stepmom, Mrs. Cole, comes into the office with another of the boys' parents, both of whom are quite concerned with their children being charged with distribution of child pornography. Barba tells Carisi that even by passing the pics that he's got on a tablet to Barba, he could face kiddie porn charges, and then they decide that the next best step is to confiscate every phone at the school to prevent the images from living on for eternity on the darkest corners of the internet. Rich fucks being rich fucks, some parents give a little pushback and Mrs. Cole's stepson is out sick. Liv then has to go into the pediatrician where it turns out Noah has been exposed to measles from another kid, who Liv worries is Gabriel's little brother. Noah's gotten a dose of the MMR vaccine and has to quarantine for 8 days because of the exposure, which means Liv will be working from home for the time being. Amaro goes to check in with his son to make sure he's been vaccinated, where he finds out that the gangs in the neighborhood are too bad and his mother is moving them to San Diego. Rollins and Carisi go to Barbo with the results of Taru's contact tracing. The images are all over Red Janet. Red Janet. And the kiddie porn palaces of the dark web. But it had to have been uploaded by one of the 7 phones not seized at the school, which means they'll need to serve 7 warrants to find the culprits who uploaded the pics after being told explicitly not to 2 days prior. First warrant served, Larry Heller, whose very recognizable mother, attorney Arlene Heller, is along to tell him he's even dumber than his father after losing his 8th phone this year. But the phone turns up in his disaster of a locker. Next up, bemeasled child of rich white bitch who's mid-coffee clutch with 2 other moms, including the queen bee, wannabe goop maven, mommy blogger who is pretty much the poster child for the anti-vax privileged sect. Back at the Benson abode, Lucy rushes in to tell Liv that Noah's turning blue and is having trouble breathing, which points to baby measles dough being exposed by this pocket of rich fucks. Carisi thinks he's running a fever, but Rollins won't check his forehead. They do have the tracing data back, and sure enough, it's Larry Heller who distroed the Teen Beach Fest to every corner of the internet. Barba brings in Arlene, who says her shitbird kid will cooperate with flipping the predatorial disseminators of porn, but that the real criminals are the fucko hippie parents who conspired to circumvent New York state law mandating all children be vaccinated in order to attend school. A little pressing reveals a real shocker. Bitch-ass mommy blogger lined up a doc to falsify vaccination records and spread the poisonous gospel. At arraignment, Dr. Satrakian gets his case split from Not Jenny McCarthy because they want to unhitch their wagon from that loon, and they plea out with the understanding that he will testify against her with the condition that he loses his license. A textbook anti-vax defense is mounted, Noah gets sicker, and on her way to check in on Noah in the hospital, Liv is accosted with holistic hokum from Ms. Anti-Vax, to which she responds with a Get the fuck out of my face with this shit if you don't want to end up being found strewn across the five boroughs, because that's what happens when you fuck with baby Doe. The jury finds her not guilty on a first-degree charge of reckless endangerment, but guilty of second-degree reckless endangerment. Finn and Amaro check in with Liv at the hospital, who says that Noah will just be under doctor supervision for a couple more days, but he's through it now. And we get a, this little fucker sure is snake bit dick wolf.
Yeah, that poor little baby boy Doe, man.
Oh, sweet child, sweet child.
So many terrible things happened to him. Did he even get any blueberry pancakes at the end of this?
Probably not.
Well,
I think we have the ripped from the headlines bit that we probably have to cover.
Yeah.
Mercifully, I've also written up shit about that.
You teased it throughout the recap, so yeah, go for it.
Though not ripped from more recent COVID-related headlines, this is ripped from the headlines following outbreaks of measles amongst pockets of largely affluent white communities of parents who believe themselves to have cracked the code on what causes autism. Mm-hmm. The measles, mumps, rubella vaccine.
They're wrong.
They're wrong. Yeah, and trust me, I'll get into that. Okay, so Pacific Palisades was specifically mentioned as having been the point of origin from which Gabriel contracted measles. Pacific Palisades is nestled between Santa Monica and Malibu on the west side of Los Angeles and has been largely connected to where the anti-vax movement has caught hold. Per a September 2014 Hollywood Reporter article, 75% of parents of students at Westside Waldorf School in Pacific Palisades had filled out a personal belief exemption form for their children, meaning they opted out of vaccinating their children and making it the most susceptible school in the greater LA area to an outbreak.
That's why they call it the Palisades, bro.
Trudy Malko, Missy Pyle's character, is specifically modeled on Jenny McCarthy, yes, with a healthy dash of Gwyneth Paltrow thrown in there with the whole mommy blogger bullshit. Mm-hmm. Now, the key piece of work on this subject is Seth Mnookin's book from 2012, The Panic Virus, A True Story of Medicine, Science, and Fear. Upon moving to Brooklyn, Mnookin began to be exposed to educated professionals with kids who were doing the research, mm-hmm, and coming to the conclusion that vaccines were harmful to their children. Mm. Much of this research was based on a thoroughly debunked paper written by British quack Andrew Wakefield, who's since been stripped of his medical license, mm-hmm, and the paper that they cite has been retracted. In that paper, he falsely claimed there was a link between the MMR vaccine to Crohn's disease, and then later he linked it to autistic enterocolitis. His research methods were wildly suspect. No other researchers have been able to reproduce the results of his study. The study consisted of 12 children, some of whom were recruited for the study by lawyers. At a press conference and on a video put out by his hospital before the study was published, he pushed for the cessation of the use of the MMR 3-in-1 vaccine until further study could be conducted. Of course, he also reportedly refused to repeat the study in a controlled setting to validate his, quote, findings. Mm-hmm. And the paper stated that there was no causal connection between the vaccine and autism, but the damage was done and the MMR vaccination scare was off and running. Shortly thereafter, 60 Minutes brought him on and gave him an institutional American platform to start the spread of his bullshit here, too. Following this study, he moved from the UK to Austin, mm-hmm, to become executive director at Thoughtful House Center for Children, where he continued to promote the theory linking the MMR vaccine to autism and Crohn's, despite admitting it wasn't proved. The paper was extremely controversial and was quickly the subject of a UK General Medical Council inquiry into the study. Then, in 2004, Sunday Times reporter Brian Deer produced evidence to a Channel 4 documentary exposing Wakefield for having tried to patent a standalone single measles vaccine. Wakefield sued everyone involved for libel, with his lawyers claiming no such patent was applied for, despite all the documentation provided. And then his lawyers asked for the libel suit they'd filed to be frozen while the UK GMC carried out its inquiry. As this suit was playing out, Brian Deer also discovered that not only were Wakefield's research and intentions suspect, but that he'd failed to disclose a financial conflict of interest in which the solicitors, lawyers, who were funding the research to provide evidence against vaccine manufacturers, and that he himself had received £435,643 from them to conduct said research.
Weird.
In addition to the fortune he'd have made patenting separate vaccines.
Weird.
Wakefield then had a former grad student testify that he ignored data that contradicted his initial hypothesis throughout the study. Brian Deere spent much of the next 7 years throttling Wakefield's study in myriad ways. You can read more about that on the myriad articles linked in the Andrew Wakefield section of the Wikipedia page. All this shit from Ripped from the Headlines is going to be, all the sources are going to be in the details for the episode. There's virtually nothing about this study that holds up. In short, Deere summarily tore the whole study apart in a British Medical Journal article that was accompanied by a BMJ editorial where the editorial board of the British Medical Journal stated, "Clear evidence of falsification of data should now close the door on this damaging vaccine scare."
But
who perpetuated this fraud? There is no doubt that it was Wakefield.
Yes.
Is it possible that he was wrong, but not dishonest? That he was so incompetent that he was unable to fairly describe the project or to report even one of the 12 children's cases accurately? No. A great deal of thought and effort must have gone into drafting the paper to achieve the results he wanted. The discrepancies all led in one direction. Misreporting was gross. Moreover, although the scare of GMC's 217-day hearing precluded additional charges focused directly on the fraud, the panel found him guilty of dishonesty concerning the study's admissions criteria, its funding by the Legal Aid Board, and his statements about it afterwards. So, despite Brian Deere's persistence, yielding a complete and utter debunking of the only study that linked the MMR vaccine to autism, he still has his adherence.
Mm-hmm. And he got his money, too. He was the incentive structure still exists.
One such acolyte, the woman who penned the foreword to Wakefield's book, Callous Disregard. And please, do not buy his book.
No.
That woman is Jenny McCarthy, who, after dabbling in New Age crystal spirituality, fell in with an anti-vax group following her son's autism diagnosis. McCarthy became the de facto but wildly unqualified spokeswoman for pseudoscientific autism nostrums, making claims of helping her son recover from autism with a bevy of unfounded treatments, along with mainstreaming this MMR causes autism bullshit on Oprah, who platformed her and said McCarthy had, quote, mommy instinct and knew what she was talking about, end quote.
Nice, Oprah.
And then went so far as to sign her to a fucking development deal because apparently inflicting fucking Dr. Phil and Dr. Oz on the world wasn't enough.
Mm-hmm.
People magazine and Larry King gave her the star treatment too. So essentially, our celebrity-obsessed culture decided we should listen to someone about vaccines and autism treatments who has absolutely zero background in epidemiology because they can sound sort of smart, are relatable, and look good doing it because she bought into a thoroughly debunked study and a whole lot of other bullshit.
I'm going to have to stop you right there, Josh. I've heard Jenny McCarthy speak on multiple occasions. I've never heard her.
I was giving her the benefit of the doubt per Mnuchin, who had said that she does actually sound good talking about it.
Yeah, I'm sure she sounds passionate about the issue. When the Wahlbergs got greenlit? Is that when that shit started off? Because that was sort of her like getting back into being famous again.
I think that really the thing that got her back into being famous was the autism shit.
Yeah, but she had like a couple different peaks there, right? She didn't go away the way that she probably should have many years ago.
Right.
Yeah.
Now, since this episode has aired, McCarthy has sort of stepped back from being the extremely vocal proponent of the movement.
Yeah.
In a Tom Cruiseian calculation akin to his stepping back from so publicly championing Scientology and looking like a fucking maniac doing so.
Yeah.
She rarely talks about it publicly, but she is still the president of Generation Rescue. Don't go to that website either. Of course, much of the hell we find ourselves in now was nurtured by all of this bullshit.
Mm-hmm.
So fuck everyone I just mentioned,
yeah,
aside from the people who were committed to debunking all of this bullshit.
Yeah. Also, fuck Gwyneth Paltrow, who have sort of partially mentioned.
Yeah.
She hasn't, as far as I can tell, taken a very explicit stand about MMR specifically, but she has some fairly wild notions about the COVID vaccine and why she didn't need it because she apparently was had contracted COVID sometime in like September or October 2019, which doesn't seem possible.
Of course she did. Yeah. Didn't she see Contagion where she fucking killed the entire world?
I know.
What an asshole. I mean, she doesn't even remember, like, Marvel movies she was in. There was a panel talking about some movie, and she did not... she was like, what movie? And they're like, you're in it. So...
so there's, like, one gallery in our neighborhood, and it's hard to tell what it is. Because it's filled with some shit that is totally just, like, garage sale bullshit. But apparently they have a Banksy for sale inside there.
Good luck buying that and having it not shred itself.
Yeah. One thing you can definitely buy in this place, if it's ever open, I've only seen it open once, and that was for a brief amount of time, but there's a basket of yoni eggs in the corner there. Listeners, if you're not familiar with yoni eggs, they are another very debunked Gwyneth Paltrow product that you stick them inside your hoo-ha, yeah. Ladies, and supposedly it does something. But apparently what it definitely does...
it's basically a box rock.
It's caused some fairly significant gynecological problems. So apparently it's...
so stay away.
Highly not recommended.
Okay, so we should probably dive into the guest stars here.
Yeah, guest stars. There's a few of them.
There's a few. It's not a bunch. A lot of the kids haven't really been in much, so they're not going to get discussed.
No, and I thought Emily Dorsch was somebody that she wasn't, so...
yeah, she's not.
Yeah.
I guess first off, we kind of have to cover Missy Pyle, who is Trudy Malco here, the analog for Jenny McCarthy.
Mm-hmm.
She was born in Houston, grew up in Memphis. She graduated from North Carolina School for the Arts in 1995. She was in a country rock band in the late aughts, or maybe it was even later than that, but she was in a country rock band, Smith and Pyle, for a few years with actor Shawnee Smith. She's been main cast in The Wedding Bells, Jennifer Falls, Bordertown, Sing It, Impulse, and was a recurring on Dirty John, Two and a Half Men, Another Period, The Sarah Silverman Program, Inside Amy Schumer, The Soul Man, and Mom. On the big screen, she's appeared in Galaxy Quest, Big Fish, Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, Dodgeball, Gone Girl, Captain Fantastic, Jumanji, Welcome to the Jungle, and Josie and the Pussycats as a character named Alexandra Cabot.
Weird. That's very weird.
I remembered that because I've seen it in the last year or so, and I was like, wait, what? So then we've got...
wait, hold up. One question, though. So
go for it.
The Soul Man, I'm not familiar with this TV series. Is it a series based on the...
I know where you're going. It's not.
It's not on the...
no.
On the highly problematic 80s film?
No, okay, no. Good. The C. Thomas Howell in blackface going to Harvard on a minority scholarship. Uh-huh. No, it's not based on that. Soul Man, one of my buddy's wives wrote on it. Oh. It was a Cedric the Entertainer as a preacher show.
Nice.
Yeah.
So totally different.
Yes. Yeah, very different. Next up, we've got Hari Dillon. I hope I'm getting his last name right. It could be Jillin, I guess. It's the D-H-I-L-L-O-N. He's playing attorney Sunil Varma.
Yeah.
He was born in San Francisco. This is the first of four appearances of his as this lawyer. He's been main cast member Michael Spence and recurring cast member Sunil Gupta.
Weird.
In a total of 270 episodes of Holby City on BBC One.
Never heard of it.
Me neither. It's clearly a soap. It's got to be a soap because it's 270 episodes and that's British television. So, he had recurring parts in Billions, This Is Us, Charmed, The Loop, and Madam Secretary. He was also in Entrapment, Wit, and Bad Education, the 2019 Bad Education, not the Almodovar film.
Mm-hmm.
Next up, we've got Susie Essman, who is attorney Arlene Heller. This is her second of four appearances as Arlene Heller.
She's so much fun.
Oh, yeah, she's great. She was raised in Mount Vernon, New York, went to SUNY Purchase. She started doing stand-up in the 80s. She's probably most recognizable as having been Susie Green on Curb Your Enthusiasm, the person who most vocally and colorfully hates Larry David on the show.
Mm-hmm.
Out! 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 Get the hell out of my house, you ingrate! You hurt Sammy one more time, Larry! Get the fuck out of my house, okay? You squashed the spirit of a talented young girl! piece of shit! You heartless piece of shit!
She was also Alana Glazer's character's mom on Broad City and Lake Bell's character's mother on Bless This Mess. Then we've got Julie Lauren, who's playing Mia Beale. She's born in New York City, graduated cum laude from Dartmouth. She trained at the Neighborhood Playhouse and studied under Susan Batson and Wynn Handman. She was in John Cameron Mitchell's Rabbit Hole. She was the inappropriate sister in what her IMDb page claims is a classic episode of Friends. We'll have to take her word for it. And she was Officer Anne Shan, or Shane maybe, in 8 episodes of Homicide.
Yeah.
Making this a brain melter.
Well, she's done well for herself in the intervening years. She's no longer a cop. She lives in Soho and or Tribeca, wherever these people live.
Tribeca, yeah.
Same dog shit.
The same dog shit, different neighborhood.
Yeah, very close.
Yeah.
Both of them, you're living in a shopping mall with homeless people. That's basically it.
Good times.
Yeah.
Next up is Marla Sucharitza, or Sucharitza. Mm. Not sure how to pronounce her last name. She's playing Mrs. Harrington. She played Hensel's sister in Webb, which we covered in Munch My Benson episode 42. When I get touched in an unsafe way, I say yes, then I make a mess. That means this is even more of a brain melter than it was before when it was just Julie Lauren involved. She was in an episode of the original series and an episode of CI, in addition to appearing in The Station Agent, Road Trip, The Fan, and Whore 2.
Mm-hmm. Which I totally want to see Whore random. 2.
Oh, yeah. I probably have seen it. I just don't remember her. Then we've got Emily Dorsch. She's playing Principal Hannah Schwartz. Yeah. This is her second appearance as this character, previously appearing as the school counselor in Born Psychopath, which they just did a callback to with a Carl from Shameless reprising his role. She previously also appeared in Bullseye as another character. Her only other interesting credit to me was as Cornelia Predock in 5 episodes of Boardwalk Empire. Otherwise, there's a whole lot of one-off TV appearances on stuff like House of Cards and Fosse Bird.
Yeah.
And then we've got David Margulies.
Yeah.
He's playing Dr. Satrakian.
He's kind of a big face for such a small role, but...
Yeah, he's also not a big person.
He's very small.
As he is listed as 5'2.5".
He looked even smaller than that.
yeah, because he's standing next to his lawyer who clearly is like 6 feet, and they were just like, whatever, we already cast him. We didn't know he was going to dwarf you this badly. So he went to School of the Performing Arts. He died in 2016 at the age of 78. He was the mayor in the Ghostbusters movies.
That's where you remember him from.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. He also appeared seemingly always as doctors in Dressed to Kill, 9.5 Weeks, Ishtar, The Girl on the Train, A Most Violent Year, Running on Empty, and Times Square. He's basically either a mayor or a doctor. There are multiple mayor credits also.
Was he one of Dr. Fleischman's relatives in an episode of Northern Exposure? He's Herb Fleischman.
I didn't... Oh, shit. Yeah, he was then.
Yeah, nice.
Is Herb his dad?
I don't remember. You've seen it a lot more... I've seen it a lot more recently.
Yeah. I'm trying to think if Herb was his dad's name. I don't think Herb is his dad's name, but maybe it was. I have to unage him by like 20 years. No, I did just see the episode with his dad, but Herb Fleischman might have been...
Like an uncle, something like... He's only in one episode, so...
Yeah, but I think his parents were only in one episode. Well, his dad was. His mom came up to visit separately. Anyway, we're going way into the weeds on Northern Exposure. Yeah. Don't have to. Now, Times Square, which he was in, I believe he's a doctor in that. That was that teen lesbian punk movie that they cut all the overt lesbian stuff from, starring a young Trini Alvarado.
Yeah, nice.
Then we've got Christine Toy Johnson, who's playing Dr. Celia Lee. She was Mrs. Yang in Iron Fist. This is the 5th of 5 appearances for her on SVU, and her 2nd as Dr. Lee. She was Sister Mary Leo in Nonsense and Nonsense 2, the sequel, which were Rue McClanahan TV movies that looked to clearly be going for the Sister Act fan base. She was also in 3 episodes of The Americans and 2 episodes of You.
Hey, Josh, I'm here for Nonsense or Nonsense 2, if you're interested.
I can't fathom us being able to actually watch them. Next up, we've got Dante Palmateri playing Leo McAdams. This is Chaz Palminteri's son, as I speculated last week.
Yep.
He was in Sharknado 2. And then lastly, we've got two recurrings who I'm just going to touch on for a second.
Sure.
We've got Bronwyn Reed, who's playing Lucy Heston. She's Noah's nanny. We talked about her back in Munch My Benson 45, if you really want to hear about her. That one's called There's a Goddamn Robot from Rocky IV, and they did not use it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she's kind of comes and goes for years.
Yeah, because that was season 18, episode 17, Real Fake News, mm-hmm. that we covered. And then lastly, I'm just going to, for 1 second, say we've got Jefferson Mays here. Yeah. Who's playing M.E. Carl Rudnick. There are other episodes yet to be drawn that we'll need to talk a lot more about him, okay. So I'm going to put that off until then.
I thought he was good. I liked him, so I looked him up. But yes, we can talk about him in
Because there are episodes later. where he's very centrally involved in them.
Interesting.
And I feel like talking about him before then is kind of pointless. So
fine.
All right.
He's not that interesting. So yeah, great.
We open on a truly awful song by Cobra Starship.
You found it. Thank God you found
Good
it.
Good Girls Go Bad, which also features Leighton Meester.
Whatever that means.
Leighton Meester's from Gossip Girl.
Oh, Jesus Christ. Was it hard to track that one down? I didn't look it up, but...
No, the first time I was watching it, it was on the subtitles. And so, like, it flashed by, and then I tried... Well, on the second pass, it didn't come up on the subtitles, because first time I watched it in my place, second time I watched here at Drew's place.
Both on Hulu, right? So...
Both on Hulu, and so it didn't say... Weird. It didn't say the song name the first time, but it did the second time. Anyway, my feeling about this song is that if Gonorrhea was a song... This would be it.
Here's the thing about this song. If they were just trying to give us the flavor of a teen party for 30 seconds, it would have still been awful, but it wouldn't have seared its way into my memory the way it did, because we watched it for like, it feels like 5 minutes.
At least a minute and a half, maybe 2 minutes.
But yeah, it's...
It feels like they played the entire fucking song.
I know. And
it was brutal.
Which is jarring. It's not the only jarring choice that they make in this episode, but it's one of the most jarring choices.
There are definitely others.
But the other thing that's happening here is there is some wild hypersexualization of minors.
My very next note is, cool, the teen who was being objectified in the shower... Evan Daves, whose age I cannot verify, but at the very least is playing a teenager, who we've already seen, presumably soaping up his dong, is running a fever, but absentee father thinks he should go to school. Sick people, stay the fuck home.
Yeah, really. I think everybody should know after the last year and a half that stay home. Everybody wants you to stay home.
I feel like not everyone fucking knows that, and there are a lot of people that are fucking assholes who just do whatever the fuck they want.
It's true.
Anyway, the blonde, Hayden Tweedy, mm-hmm. who takes her shirt off, looks to have been 22 at the time.
Okay, that's good.
Yeah. So I guess we hold out hope that they're not asking minors to disrobe in this episode.
It sure felt like they were. And put on multicolored lipstick so we know that they're...
One of them is only... I'll get to it eventually, but one of them's only 15.
Jesus Christ.
Maybe 16 at taping, but I think she's 15. Now, seeing all these people touching each other and visualizing a contagion passing is legit terrifying. Mm-hmm. Is this the scariest episode of SVU?
But what's kind of funny about it, right, is because in many ways, what we're seeing is a wholly consensual sort of activity going on, right? Sure, they're minors and they shouldn't be photographed doing it, but they all seem to be there of their own free will. Nobody's being coerced or anything like that.
Right. Yeah.
And yet, yeah, we're watching it horrified because we know that there's this sickness passing from like shitty kid to shitty kid.
Because again, as a viewer, you do not get to see sexuality. And I will say that I don't think this is a healthy thing, but it is consensual sex.
It's definitely not healthy, but on the scale of SVU, it's like not...
It's consensual.
Yeah.
From what we can surmise.
Yeah. What's unhealthy is us as viewers having to watch it. That's kind of...
It's super gross, but it's just another instance in which people engaging in consensual sex acts, regardless of like the overarching health risks to them, are then immediately... Something awful happens to them because sex can't happen in this show.
Absolutely.
In a healthy way.
Never.
Now, this all happened during off-campus lunch. I mean, it's been a long time since I was a teen, but there's no way these boners are lasting more than 3 minutes before blowing and having to wait to go again.
Wait, that was supposed to be a lunch party?
Yes, that was at lunch.
Oh my God. Like,
I'm sure they don't want it getting back to everyone at school that they were pushing rope. And refractory periods still exist for perma-hard teenage boys. But the time frame that we're expected to buy into here is fucking absurd.
They all have to leave, like, commute. You know, it's going to be a 15-minute walk.
The school's in Tribeca.
Sure, but
I bet it's closer than that even. I bet it's 5 minutes.
But you got to go downstairs. You got to go over. You got to go upstairs. That takes time. Then you get there.
Yeah, but when you're about to get blown by 7 different people, I think you're rushing up
but
the stairs.
But that party, like...
Because you're not concerned about swampy balls.
They're pouring shots. They're dancing. They're doing a striptease. They're...
No. I mean, it's absurd. Like, the fucking... The montage tells me that there's a lot more time passing than lunch hour.
Yes. I thought it was a whole afternoon. Oh, my God.
Now, this isn't a second unit shoot.
No.
But this cold open scene is still absurd.
It's very strong second unit vibe. So maybe they...
Yeah. Now, there's no dialogue in this scene, right?
Are
they speaking? They're speaking a little bit. Okay, so there is sound rolling.
Yeah, there is sound. And in the very beginning, there's dialogue. Like before the party starts, there's dialogue. I guess we didn't even talk about like live at the doctor's office, but who cares?
Who cares? Yeah. I don't care about that. There are also clear teenagers amongst the nine who may not have been asked to strip down to their bras, but are still asked to slather on a ton of colored lipstick with the implication that said lipstick will find its way to teen boy doms.
Yeah, the whole point of it is that it goes onto a dom. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. And then Chaz Palminteri's kid totally jerked it to that shit in class. Like, obviously. Amaro's joke about missing an episode of Girls was funny because it implies that he otherwise watches Girls.
He would watch Girls.
And by asking the rest of the squad if he missed one, are we to believe that this is their water cooler show?
You know, it was very popular at the time, and I could see them all being into it. I could see Rollins watching Girls, and I could see Carisi watching whatever Rollins was watching, so it makes sense to me.
Also, I can say there was never a Rainbow Party episode of Girls, if you were curious.
I wasn't curious because I don't like Girls and I don't intend to watch it, but it makes sense that they wouldn't have a Rainbow Party because it doesn't seem like exactly the same milieu.
Right, which seems like a weird poll.
It's more of a Degrassi thing.
Yeah, much more a Degrassi thing. I'm pretty sure Emma did that.
That's how you get throat gonorrhea, kids.
Yep, that's how you get gonorrhea in the throat, by blowing Jay in a van in the ravine.
What a great show.
I know. We watched so much of that working at traffic.
I still can't believe that Drake became famous after that. I just can't fucking believe it.
Okay, so Ginger Balls with a stupid backwards cap that makes him look like he just walked out of an Archie comic does not run track.
No. It might be distance.
That kid, no, he's never done anything in his fucking life.
No, but Josh, you don't know what it's like to go to a small private school. All those kids had to do some kind of sport.
I ran distance.
The gangly kids go
run
distance.
My class was only like 140.
Still, their classes probably like
this guy, it's a different thing. He oozes inactivity. I've seen scrawny ass runners who are really fast. He's not that. You don't wear a hat like that if you're fast. Because he's wearing it backwards, but like so far back on his head that it's like a yarmulke almost.
Well, maybe it's a dual purpose. I didn't remember what his last name was. It could be, you know, could be a skull cap.
But it's a baseball cap. It's got a bill on it.
Anyway, speaking of yarmulkes.
It's not a yarmulke.
I spoke to my landlord for the first time today, and he has an Italian name, but he clearly has an Israeli accent, so there's something weird going on there. I have lots of theories as to what's going on with my apartment building and why I'm paying so little in rent, but I don't want to get into it because they might be listening.
Yeah. All right. Do you think teen beach parties are goop approved?
You know, they would probably want you to like allow your kids to flourish, right? To find their own way in the world. And probably they wouldn't want them drinking, you know, any old vodka while they were doing it. Definitely not the Taka and the plastic.
I don't feel like it was a plastic bottle.
There were a lot of small bottles, little like half pints, fifths.
I was wondering if maybe they weren't drinking Goldschlager.
I mean, they would drink Goldschlager.
It seems like a thing that they would drink.
That's pretty much the dedicated drink for your beach party.
Yeah. Yeah. Thinking of you's working up my sticks and stones together make the sparks ignite, and the thought of loving you is getting so exciting. Sky rockets in flight. All right, so Barba giving Carisi the business with that not your call line.
Yeah.
Funny. Like, I low-key love how Barba suffers Carisi with visible irritation.
Yeah, but it's fun because he also
it is fun.
Like,
yeah.
It's nice that Carisi is learning and thinks, you know, he cares. Yeah. I love the way they introduce Carisi, actually. The more I see these kind of like earlier Carisi
ones. Yeah, these season 16 episodes, Carisi's pretty much awesome the whole time.
Yeah, it's great. And like I don't feel like I'm like slogging through his backstory the way that I feel like I'm slogging through Liv's in this very same episode.
Yeah. So then we get a Citizen 4 reference. Citizen 4 was the 2014 Oscar and Emmy winning documentary about Edward Snowden, who had reached out to the documentarian Laura Poitras, initially as a stranger with the handle Citizen 4. Mm. He went on to out the NSA's illegal wiretapping operation.
Yeah.
The documentary is really good.
They kind of do this in that initial scene with the kids, but they do this throughout this episode. Did you notice the handheld in this one? Now, SVU is often shot handheld, right?
Yeah.
And so it's not surprising when it's a little shaky, but in this episode I felt it was a lot shakier than normal, and I don't know if it was a choice or what, but the camera was bouncing all over the place in times when it did not seem like it fit,
like it was sending across a sense of urgency.
Exactly, there wasn't urgency. There wasn't like a panic going on. It was just like in a room with like kind of time stops Liv talking about Noah scene and the cameras bouncing all over the place. And I question those choices. They could have used the Steadicam for that one. Bust out the gimbal. I don't know. I don't know if they use gimbals that much.
Yeah, they're probably not using a gimbal for most of it. Yeah. Especially for the shakier shit, they're not.
They're definitely obviously not. I mean, they're just putting it on their shoulders. But they were doing it. Yeah, there were some scenes where it's just like, man, this is distracting. Felt like the Blair Witch Project.
Or early NYPD Blue felt like that.
Yeah, but that worked. It was supposed to be gritty and in your face.
I know it was supposed to be gritty, but it was still like, when handheld's distracting,
it's a problem. Yeah.
It's a problem.
Yeah, absolutely. And it kind of did that a couple times in my mind in this one.
Right. So Chloe, the one worried about Candy Crush, was a sophomore in high school at this time.
Nice.
I guess it stands to reason that her character might not understand the gravity of having pics of her at a rainbow party getting out into the world.
So, okay, I did not watch it a second time, so I don't remember. But I feel like she was dancing with at least with somebody who took her top off.
Well, and they showed her putting on lipstick.
Yeah, they definitely showed her.
But yeah, she was in that shot with Hayden Tweedy.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. So Jaden's dad thinks his kid is going to read a book. Right. Uh-huh. Also, having had many a blog, I guarantee no one cares about reading your blog, bro.
No, nobody cares. They might get on just to like flame you in the comments, but that's the only reason they'd read it.
It's not even as low involvement as a podcast. Yeah. Like you can put it on and just forget that it's even there.
Yeah.
And good luck getting anyone to listen to one of those.
Yeah, but you can't read a blog while you're shopping at the supermarket. That just doesn't work.
Or driving to work or taking the subway or whatever. whatever. No, my next note is Noah gets the 8-day quarantine, and I'm like, only an 8-day quarantine to start?
I know.
That's fucking child's play.
I know, that doesn't seem long enough. And measles is
how quaint.
Is measles is bad news, man.
It's highly contagious.
Yes, bad news. Poor little Noah. I like this Noah better than the older Noah that they
signed up. It's because he can't talk.
Yeah, he can't talk. He's cute. He's a cute little kid.
I'm not gonna talk shit about a kid.
Then they fucking ruin it. They fucking ruin it.
Goop Mom sucks.
Yeah, Goop Mom's terrible.
Yeah.
She's terrible. You see her walk in and you're like, oh, fuck, I recognize her. She sucks.
Yeah.
I don't remember if she sucks in other stuff that she's been in, but she...
No, she's usually pretty funny in other stuff.
Okay, but she definitely sucks here.
Yeah, she sucks hard here. So, Zara is in L.A., and Gil is moving to San Diego. Mm-hmm. So, writing's on the wall for Amaro to move to SoCal.
Yeah.
Also, what kind of money is his ex making that they can afford to live on the West Side, which is where all the fucking problems are with the MMR shit? How could she possibly be making that much?
I don't know. I guess she got in good after her Coast Guard gig or whatever in the Pentagon. The other question I have, right, apparently the gangs were so bad in their neighborhood. That's why he's moving to L.A. or San Diego.
San Diego.
Now, I've spent more time in San Diego than you might think.
I've spent quite a bit of time there.
In my experience in San Diego and in L.A. to a certain extent, but there's a lot more kind of like gang presence feel in the bad parts of town in both of those cities than there is in New York. Like, there's definitely parts of... I guess, Chula Vista, other parts of San Diego, where you're like, huh, this doesn't feel right. When in New York, I don't know. There's like gritty, there's shitty, but it just has a slightly different feel than West Coast gang culture. I'm painting with a very broad brush here, but I would say that there is a gang culture in both of those places as well.
Yeah, I guess I've never really ended up in the wrong neighborhood in San Diego to notice it, but I've been kind of all around San Diego, and I don't feel it as much there as I did in LA.
Man, so...
But I also had to... I lived in LA, so whatever.
Yeah, exactly. You might see it. But I took the train to Tijuana to meet Pike.
Oh, I have to.
And man, that train, I felt like less safe on that train than I did anywhere in Tijuana. Well, except the time that Pike almost got us killed. But besides that...
I mean, what's a trip to TJ with Pike if you didn't almost get killed? So we get a red Shannon drop, so they're making up social media, which I believe calls for us to have to drink.
I don't have a drink, but yes.
God damn it, Adam.
Cheers. But yeah, they sure are. I liked that one, red Shannon. It's a good one.
Yeah. So then they've got 7 phones that have not been seized. And they've not gotten to any of them. So first up is Larry Heller.
This is kind of prosecutorial overreach, right? Like, so I get why.
Okay, so it's not because they could just charge all of them with possession of child pornography.
Yeah, but here's the...
This is the much less penurious way.
I guess what I'm saying is that the law and the culture are kind of in different places,
sure,
right? Because these kids are not intending to distribute child pornography for the intent of, like, dirty old skeezers.
But the issue is they have found these distributed.
Yeah, it's true. But still, I don't know. It's
But these have been disseminated. These are online now.
Yeah.
So I think that's where the real issue is coming in now, is that they seized all of these, and maybe that was overreach, but now that they've appeared online, they do have to figure out who did it.
Yes, and they conveniently find that it's Susie Green's kid.
Well, they don't get to it right away. Yeah. So they've got Larry Heller, which, I mean, wasn't far off from Larry Sellers, little Larry Sellers from The Big Lebowski.
Yeah.
And there's some similar dipshittery going on here. It sounds like he's going to find out what happens when you fuck a stranger in the ass as well.
You see what happens, Larry? You see what happens? This is what happens when you fuck a stranger in the ass, Larry.
Then Susie Essman's team rolls through this episode. It is glorious.
You're dumber than your father, you know that?
And I'm sure they named him Larry to evoke Susie screaming at Larry David.
Oh, no. I hope they let her just improv all her lines. They're like, here, this is what you need to say. Yeah, just go for it.
To town. Uh-huh. Yeah, this is what you got to cover. She's a seasoned pro. Uh-huh. Then I love they're at the like coffee klatch, you know, in the upper or in the Tribeca apartment. Yeah, and that the three moms.
Outrageously expensive Tribeca apartment with like 40-foot ceilings.
And Goop says, it wasn't Gabriel I asked. And it's like, oh, really? Mm-hmm. Pretty sure that was him with a bag full of booze in the open, you clueless fucking parasite.
Yeah.
Nice touch, though, because like they are driving home the point that she knows precisely nothing and is just forcing these other moms into her cult of personality.
She does come across as the kind of like persuasive type, though, right? Like,
yes.
She like forces you to think what she likes. So I think she does a good job being odious.
Oh, yeah. No, she's not doing a bad job, but that character is fucking evil.
Yeah.
And then they get her worrying about kids bringing a knife and gun to school when her kid brought the booze and the measles, showing the complete hypocrisy of her position. And then we're responsible parents. The police don't need to act like the CIA. About that? No. You're not.
No, they're not responsible parents.
No.
But not exactly how the CIA operates. They would.
No.
The CIA would.
They'd just kill them and you'd never even know they came.
Well, what the CIA would do is they'd hire somebody else to be like them and come in there and maybe execute their leaders and then take it over and make it into an even worse anti-vaxxer program.
Sure.
That's what the CIA would do.
Yeah, for real. Maybe that's what they're doing in the South.
Most likely.
Yeah. So Finn calls out the system saying ain't shit gonna happen to these rich white kids even if they did disseminate child pornography.
Yeah, it was nice to see Finn, even if only briefly. It's been a while for
Well, and it was nice to see him get to call out bullshit race nonsense. This episode would have meant a lot more if these rich fucks killed Baby Doe.
That would have been a pretty good turning point. But no, we would have missed out on all these wonderful storylines that we've gotten with Baby Doe since then.
Yeah. Now, for once, I don't hate the Baby Doe storyline.
No, it fits.
Sure, it's happenstance that it happened, but it does tie into this case. Uh-huh. So, like, at least this one, for once, ties into an SVU case.
Yeah, and it gives the case, you know, kind of a higher stakes. It works. The whole thing kind of works. We see Liv getting to really feel like the case has put her life on the line in a way that we don't often get to see.
Right. Now, as a low-grade hypochondriac, I think it's pretty fucked up that Rollins won't feel Carisi's forehead.
No, but she should get one of the little fancy gun things that you can read temperature on. Oh,
I don't think they had those then, yeah, did they?
I don't know.
I'd never seen one until COVID.
But come on, Carisi was just trying to get a little Rollins-y time working.
Yeah, I mean, you know, he only had to wait another...
7 seasons?
It was 6 seasons. Yeah. Another 6 seasons after this, and they finally made out.
Aww. Good for them.
Yep. Good job, Carisi. All right. So mom was right. Larry's a fucking idiot.
Larry's a fucking idiot.
She also heps them to the anti-vax conspiracy and gets her son to roll on the kitty smut peddlers. She's basically like doing their job for him, right? Then Noah on his third bout of pneumonia in 2 years. Jesus Christ. Fucking Christ. Yeah. That kid's going to be dealing with some serious lung issues.
Yeah, I mean, we got to do a rundown of all the fucking problems Baby Boy Doe has lived through.
Yeah.
Kidnappings. Pneumonia.
Dr. Satrakian likes to ferberize. Are you pulling that cry it out shit with VMP?
Yeah. That's what you got to do, man. It's called self-soothing. You let them, they wake up, they scream, you go like, you ignore them and they go back to sleep. It works. It's fucking awesome.
I know somebody and they cry for you. They lie awake at night and dream of you. I bet you never even know they do, but somebody's crying. I know somebody and they called your name a million times and still you never came.
Okay, then my next note is he tries to throw them off his scent, but Carisi ain't biting. Mm. What the fuck was that about?
I don't know.
Oh, the doctor. Oh,
okay.
The doctor tries to throw him off his scent, like, oh, there have been lots of doctors working here. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Savannah thinks Loser Larry ruined the fun for everyone, which is, okay, I think you're missing the point here, Savannah. The uncoupled Trudy Malco is half Paltrow, half McCarthy, and all dumb fuck. She then gets called Typhoid Trudy by the other defense attorney, Dr. Satrakian's defense attorney.
Yeah, it's a good one.
Oh, no, shit. That's Typhoid Trudy. Susie Essman calls her Typhoid Trudy.
Oh, yeah, that makes more sense.
And then she throws in an, and you're welcome.
Margulies defense attorney was also pretty good, but more in the,
yeah, he was.
More in the, like, we don't want to be anywhere near this fucking lady.
Yeah, get us the fuck away from this lunatic. Calls her Joan of Arc.
Yeah.
Okay, so Rudnick's bow tie should have been a tell to the entire audience that something is way the fuck off with him.
Everything seemed off with him, but he also seemed like, you know, a good expert witness. I believed him. Is he as off as Sonia Paxton? Is that the deal? Like, his bow tie is her coffee cup?
I can't wait until we get to this episode.
I'm looking forward to it now.
Because I know what happens.
Fuck.
Yeah. I'm not going to tell you.
No, don't tell me. I want to be surprised. This is fun for me. I want to be surprised.
Yep. Gotta love people who understand neither causation nor correlation, making the determination that the MMR vaccine caused a complete regression into autism. I also love this secondhand nonsense where they can read much of anything from an infant. Oh, he was so bright.
Until the day he got it. Yeah, I know. Now, so I'm trying to remember the shield because the whole autism storyline definitely had kind of notes of anti-vaxxer propaganda and really made me...
That's probably Kurt Suter shit.
Yeah, I mean, I don't remember exactly how they played it. Anyways, the worst part of that show is fucking Vic Mackey's goddamn kids.
Yeah.
And I feel like this one was... It debunked it, but at the same time, man, they really gave that lady a platform to spew that shit. It was annoying.
For sure. My last note here is, you know, she gets convicted of the second charge, but not the first.
Yeah, the lesser charge.
I looked up on some fucking New York lawyer website.
Yeah.
First degree reckless endangerment is a felony in New York, and the standard you need to meet as the prosecution is to prove that their conduct created a grave risk of death to another person or showed a depraved indifference to human life. It can be met with a sentence of 28 months to 7 years in prison if it's your first offense. Second degree reckless endangerment is a misdemeanor, but can still lead to a prison sentence of up to 1 year and probation for up to 3 years, along with possible community service and restitution. You also can't expunge the charge of second degree from your record.
So whatever she needs to do where she has to prove a record, it'll show up.
Right.
Let's rank this thing. So we rank these episodes every week. We're trying to kind of fit them into the canon of other SVUs that we've watched. And this one's weird because we just watched one that was 2 episodes earlier than this one. I do not think it's at the same level as Parole Violations was. I don't know about you.
No, nor do I.
But we have 4 criteria that we judge these on. We do it on quality, guests, how problematic it was, and the depth and breadth of lives ruined. Now, the weird thing is this might tick boxes, kind of, because let's just start with that last one. Definitely a lot of people's, well, I guess it depends on how severe their illness was, but
I mean, I don't think we see anyone dying.
No.
I guess the bigger fallout would probably be the pictures online.
Well, the pictures online, but also, Josh, the sort of MMR vaccine bullshit directly fed into the COVID vaccine bullshit.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
Which has, you know, led to anti-science feeling, 600,000 dead, et cetera, et cetera.
And, you know, fucking morons believing that they know more than epidemiologists.
Exactly.
And, you know, deciding that they're going to believe Dr. Drew, who has no fucking background.
Yeah, fuck that guy.
He's a fucking internist.
Yeah.
Like, what the fuck does he doesn't know shit about. I mean, he already fucked up a lot. And I've met him. He's like an okay guy to
you
me.
Have?
And, he was actually nice.
You met Dr. Drew? Huh.
Yeah. And I was told explicitly not to talk to him at all. Because that's one of those things that, like, when you're on a set, the people for talent, they'll reach out and be like, make sure no one talks to my client.
I get it.
You know, the manager or the publicist or whoever will say that. Like, make sure no one talks to Dr. Drew.
Yeah.
And so we were very specifically told not to talk to Dr. Drew, but he was actually super nice, did fucking pictures with people, and we were all instructed not to, like, interact with him.
Yeah.
Took pictures with people. He asked me for a coffee, like, from Crafty.
Yeah.
And I was like, it's really bad. I don't think you want it. He's like, no, that's fine. I can drink shitty coffee.
Yeah.
And I'm paraphrasing. He probably didn't say shitty, but he's like, oh no, that's fine. I was like, how do you take it? He's like, however he took it, you know, and then he was like thankful for me having gotten it. And he was like way more down to earth than his advanced people made you think that he would have been. He was actually super pleasant.
Sure.
But that being said, he's said a lot of shit on TV and on the radio that is kind of deleterious to people.
Yeah. And helped Adam Carolla's career get going, which is also pretty deleterious.
I would say that Adam Carolla probably was going to have that career anyway.
Ay, ay, ay.
He was already on the radio before that.
I guess. I just don't understand, Josh. I don't understand how anybody could find that guy funny.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't make any sense to me.
I mean, I definitely had a time when Loveline was on TV that I thought that show was funny.
Yeah.
I will say that.
Yeah.
But I was also like 16.
Exactly. Okay, so back to this show.
Sorry.
The depth and breadth of lives ruined. Yeah. What do you think? 5? I don't know. 4? Nobody dies. It's probably more like a 3.
Nobody dies, but the overarching...
It is like an epidemic.
Anti-vax issue. Like, how do we weigh 600,000 dead?
Yeah.
Well, on this episode? This isn't a COVID episode, but...
It's not. Yeah.
This thinking directly feeds into that.
Yes, exactly. The anti-science...
I think it's tangential. Not so tangential that it shouldn't weigh in on the rating, but probably a 5.
Okay, let's give it a 5. So we're kind of boosting it from maybe like a 3 if there was no COVID. Okay.
Right.
Okay.
Because the only real damage is to Baby Doe.
And he's fine after this. I mean, he comes back and...
We don't know that he doesn't have serious asthma.
Of course he has serious asthma, Josh. He has serious everything. So how problematic was it? Again, same thing.
Yeah.
Well, it's actually got two kind of big problematic parts.
I mean, it's got the whole sexualizing of minors.
It sure does. Not just sexualizing them, but also, like, there's, I think, a screen time with that sexualization, right? So it's like one thing when we see a second unit photo, right, that the flashes on the screen for 10 seconds. If I stop the show.
It's another thing where they're stewing in it. Uh-huh.
And that song was highly 2 minutes.
Yeah, the song was very much about what was going on in a fucked up way.
I mean, in just a horrible
song. And it was terrible.
Horrible
song.
Yeah.
So it's problematic that they made us sit through that song.
Give me a number then.
Shit. It's probably a 6.
Yeah, it's probably a 6. I think it's a 6.
Yeah.
Because it's problematic for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. Inarguably.
But it's after the credits roll. The problematic stuff is not really fun.
No.
And then, okay, guests. I thought all the guests, Susie Eisman is great. She's wonderful.
Yeah, she's fantastic.
Everybody else was pretty good, and there was a lot of them.
And Missy Pyle was good at being that person.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. She was very good. Chaz Palminteri kid was good at being kind of a shithead teenage guy.
Yeah, I mean, all the teenagers were good at being presumably themselves.
Yeah.
Shitheads.
Yeah. I don't.
Yeah. Susie Eisman being great isn't enough to, like, raise it much past, like, a 3 or a 4 for me.
Yeah. I think you're...
None of them were bad, but there's not a lot to do, and it's really just...
It's fairly by the numbers with this kind of funny lady from a different TV show who's in it.
Yeah, who just lays waste to everyone in her path. It's fantastic. Typhoid, truly.
Let's give it a 4 because she's funny.
Okay, yeah, Susie Essman's great.
Yeah, she's really funny. And then...
And, I mean, really, every scene she's in, it's just like, oh, this is fucking Susie at 10. She is not holding back. She's just bulldozing.
The line is like, you're almost... As dumb as your father is really great.
Oh, yeah. Amazing.
Now, overall quality, I don't think it's very good.
It's not that good.
It's not that good. It's like a 2 or a 3 for me. It's not dog shit, but it's not very good. Maybe
I think it's probably a 3.
Okay. Okay.
It's not a 2. I think 2 is reserved for...
Have we given a 2 before?
Oh, we've given 2s before.
I don't think we've given 2s. No, we've given a 2 to that.
I know we've given a 2 before.
Choice. We're looking at sandwich handling through pandemic ice. We gave a 2.
This is better than that.
Yeah, probably better than that.
That episode's interminable.
Yeah. This is not interminable. No. It does move, so it's got that going for it. I mean, the courtroom stuff is boring, but it usually is. And Barb always makes it a little bit better. I think he plays it pretty well. Okay, so... The final score is a 4.5. That seems about right. Let's see what else is in the 4.5 area. We also gave a 4.5 to that Nick Chinland
execution.
3:15. Our job is to sit there and enjoy it. And that's the only other 4.5. You know, we almost gave them exactly the same rankings for everything. And yet I can't imagine two being... They're pretty different.
Yeah, very different.
Yeah.
Execution's a weird episode.
Oh, yeah. Big time.
Yeah.
Execution.
I mean,
there's
a fucking 36 hours earlier or whatever.
Mm-hmm. It goes backwards. We think Wong might be dead for most of it. There's a variety of things.
Okay, so we will fire up the randomizer here.
Nice.
Going over to episode.lol, which is fueled by Friend of the Pod Flat.
Nice.
And the tape is spinning. Bill and Ted are not pleased to be going through this.
Oh, I hate that part.
And we've got season 4, episode 5, Disappearing Acts. Benson and Stabler clash with an assistant U.S. attorney, Pam Greer, when their rape victim and their prime suspect disappear into witness protection.
Hmm.
This one is directed by Alex Zakrewski, however you say his name. He's a EP on Bosch.
Mm-hmm. Have we seen Michael Kelly before in an episode?
We have. Yeah. He was in the Andrew McCarthy episode.
That's right. Yeah.
And John Hurd's in it too.
Nice. Well, yeah. I might have to like try to do a remote recording. I'll go across 110th Street so we can use that song.
Yeah. Yeah. Sounds good. I don't know. That's the episode for next week. Disappearing Acts 4-5.
I'm excited. I love Pam Greer. She's fantastic.
So, yeah, this should be fun. As always, make sure to head over to Apple Podcasts or Podchaser, or I think you can review on Google Podcasts as well.
I think so. I think you can review on Spotify. I don't remember.
I don't know that you can on Spotify, if you can, fucking review it.
You can't review on Stitcher?
No, you can't review on Stitcher.
Lame.
Agreed.
But Apple definitely helps a lot.
Yeah, Apple helps a ton. And that's like pretty much half of every podcast is listened to on Apple Podcasts. So please rate and review the podcast. Throw those 5 stars our way.
Woo-hoo.
Follow us on the socials. We've got a subreddit and all of our social medias at MunchMyBenson. I think that's it.
Yeah, I think so. So, you know, keep on munching, guys.
Yep.
We'll talk to you next week.
Munch everyone's Benson.
Teenagers alone in a $10 million loft in Tribeca, what could possibly go wrong?
And they got drunk and high, stripped down, and had a oral sex competition. They used different shades of lipstick.
I get it. No teachers. They're all minors.
Ranging in age from 14 to 16, no one's claiming coercion.
Since no minor engaged in sexual activity with anybody over 18, I don't see statutory.
You don't? No, your call. But you're right. The bigger issue is these photos. How explicit do they get?
Well, help yourself. Here.
Okay. Huh. You realize that just showing me these could be considered a federal crime?
Seriously?
Yeah. If that's your personal tablet, I'd get rid of those.